Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Wanted to tap base with somebody who's no stranger to our airwaves. We know him for his work in independent journalism. Dave ID, or David, if you want to call it. Recently, he penned something that is being read far and wide. It's an opinion piece that is in the Sacramento Bee, of all places. But it's an important piece, and it leads to hopefully some crucial next steps that people who are in the fight to end police terrorism will be taking. I'm going to let him describe this conversation, but basically what you talked about is a real big problem, which is keeping track of the misconduct that takes place with police. And we find over and over again there are police officers who do dirt in one department, get reprimanded, go to another one, and they get a clean slate, and we don't know until, you know, they're, unfortunately, somebody gets brutalized or killed, and then you come to find out that they've had, you know, this sordid record. We are just recently celebrating or commemorating the 10th anniversary of Verdict Day, you know, when they sentenced Johannes Mesley for the killing of Oscar Grant. And we were looking at the fact that for a long time we didn't know that Mesley had this record of beating people and acting ill and doing all this stuff because it was hidden. So this has been a long fight. And so maybe you can give us a political lay of the land as to where things are in terms of transparency and what the next steps are to, you know, to become even more transparent.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Historically, with the California Police Bill of Rights, there's been a huge veil of secrecy around police misconduct, police violence, police terrorism, and but that's slowly starting to change. The winds are changing. Recently, Senate Bill 1421 was passed, and that is has required police to reveal a little bit of misconduct, the discharge of firearms, the use of force resulting in death or bodily injury, and sustained findings of sexual assault or dishonesty. Of course, a lot of police departments, law enforcement agencies are resistant, but those records are slowly but surely coming out.
Well, let me ask you that. Let's just stop there, because that seems like a reasonable request. If I'm a doctor and, you know, and I have some malpractice cases against me, you want to know that. If we go to a restaurant, you want to know that, hey, there were mice droppings found in the food. So either there's a Yelp page or there's some sort of record, you know, from the health department to let you know that this restaurant had health violations. If you're a teacher, and, you know, God forbid the teacher had some sort of sexual harassment or some sort of encounter that was inappropriate, that's on the record, so we know who you're hiring. Why is it with police that they seem to be the only or one of the few public professions that our tax dollars come to pay for that they want to have this veil of secrecy? What is the rationale?
I can't really justify it myself, but I think that they believe they're afforded special protections. It's, you know, it's a state monopoly on violence, and they protect that jealously.
So let's talk about what you wrote in the article.
Okay, I'm looking to develop a database, a police accountability database, limiting it to Northern California at first. Because the entire state is just too huge to try to tackle at one time, where police records, lawsuits, basically every source of publicly available information can be archived so that anybody from a civil rights attorney to a police accountability organization to activists to families who have lost loved ones to police violence can go and find out what police departments are working in their area, and the history of misconduct that is known. With SB 14, there are a lot of great journalistic exposés have come out, but there's no real central repository. You have to do internet searches, and you know, and maybe you can find the article, maybe you can't. Maybe there's not one. So I want to create a central repository where all of this information is stored, and you can track what police are doing. When a police officer is fired for lying from the Alameda County Sheriff's and but now works for the Pinole Police Department, that information will be readily available.
Can that information be acted upon, or do the police have protection that, you know, even though the public may know, professionally they're shielded from, you know, their employees looking into their background and, you know, and holding it against them, so to speak?
I'm not sure exactly, but the Police Bill of Rights does still exist. It still protects police in a number of ways. There was a recent report by Darwin Bond Graham about an Oakland police officer who, or a couple officers who lied about a search warrant. And that's being wrangled in court right now, where the police unions, you know, they're lobbyists basically, are arguing that the Police Bill of Rights holds sway and they cannot be held accountable for those records, and also that the police have to reveal all of their notes and private documentation on these officers who lied about a warrant while the investigation is ongoing, which is, you know, if that happened in the regular world, DAs and police detectives would be super hot. But if it's police that commit the crimes, then, you know, they don't seem to be bothered by that.
I mentioned Johannes Mesley as being a poster child for somebody who had a history of misconduct that was kind of not known to the public. In the article, the opinion piece, you named a bunch of others. Can you kind of cite some of them and, you know, so people can maybe get a better understanding of what we're talking about? So, because some of these are very serious, you know, like the Maceo, for example, you know.
Yeah, Miguel Maceo worked as a police officer in New York City, where he and fellow officers severely beat a prisoner in their custody. He resigned rather than give an interview to IA, and sure enough, he turns up in California working for various police departments. In 2012, he killed Alan Bluford in Oakland. There's other repeat offenders in Oakland, such as Hector Jimenez, who killed two unarmed people. Patrick Gonzalez has killed multiple people.
Including Gary King. That was the famous one.
Correct. Yeah, before Oscar Grant, there was a big rallying cry around Gary King in Oakland that sort of set the stage for the Oscar Grant rebellions. Sometimes some of these officers, there was another one, Ed Paulson, he helped beat somebody to death in their custody. The man, Jerry Amaro, died a month later from his injuries, but it was a result of the beating. Ed Paulson was later promoted to head Oakland Police Department's Internal Affairs Department.
Wait, so a guy who brutalized somebody is now in charge of investigating other officers. That's the IE.
Right.
IA, I'm sorry.
Right. I don't think he is anymore, but he was for a while. And he'd even tried to cover up the beating of Jerry Amaro by ordering his subordinates to lie about the cause of the injuries. So that's the way these systems work. A lot of times, some of the most violent cops are also, coincidentally, the most decorated.
With this in mind, we have a database. You know, what does that entail? Are you getting public records from the police? Are you getting statements from people who have been on the receiving end of terrorism? How would you go about compiling this database?
The idea is that everything would be verifiable. So not so much relying on individual statements about this officer or that officer. There are other projects and local cop watch groups that track that sort of information, but that sort of information is probably a lot of times best not being made public. So what I'm looking to do is to cull public records, lawsuits, information that can be pried from various police departments, city attorneys, district attorney's reports. A lot of times they're involved, you know, and they should be a part of the picture of the understanding of what's happening with police impunity now. So pretty much publicly available, verifiable information.
With the new bill that just passed, do we now get to know immediately who is involved in a shooting? For example, I remember John Burris was telling me that when they were dealing with the case of the, and I'm forgetting her name, but it was a woman that was beaten on the side of a road. It's a famous picture of her being pummeled on the side of a road in Southern Cali. And when they filed the suit, they had to put it, you know, John Doe, because the California Highway Patrol, I think at that time, didn't or wouldn't confirm the name of the officer. Does the new legislation allow us to get those names immediately, or is that even a fight in itself?
That's another fight. I don't believe there's state legislation that requires the revealing of officers' names, but because of Oscar Grant and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement across the country, so the names aren't required to be released by state law, but individual departments and cities are beginning to require it and divulge it a little more quickly, which is good. But there is a new state law that went into effect on July 1st, AB 748, that requires all law enforcement agencies to release video on demand when requested within 45 days of police shootings. That's something of a game changer. It still doesn't account for police officers who selectively turn on and off their body cameras and so forth, but there won't be they won't be holding on to it. I was thinking about one police video I want to see, you know, not in a happy way, but, you know, Brownie Polk. Oakland police said that they would release the video of that shooting 10 years ago or more, and we haven't seen it. So these videos do need to come to light, and hopefully they will begin to.
With this new requirement to, you know, release video, release names, or, you know, at least give us access to the report, are we finding that all of a sudden police are losing the reports, or things have to be rewritten and, you know, like they're deliberate, quote unquote, mistakes? In other words, they're trying to find ways to drag their feet. There seemed to be one department that wanted to charge you 75 cents a page or something crazy like that. Not 75 cents, a lot more, you know, to get copies. Are these things something that can be removed from the process of us trying to get the information? And will this database help streamline that? Or will you run into that problem in terms of you trying to collect the information yourself?
Yes, that's going to remain a problem. You know, as it becomes more normalized for the wall of secrecy to at least have some cracks in it, it's I believe, this is my own opinion, I believe it'll become less so, because it'll become more and more outlandish for police to fight to resist releasing information. But yeah, that still happens. I believe it was Fremont recently. The city councils are in on it as well. Passed a resolution allowing the Fremont Police Department to destroy records older than 2 years. So rather than release the records of misconduct and violence and lying and sexual assault that they're required to under the law, these records were destroyed before the law went into effect. So that's going to continue to be a factor. As far as the police files database, the project that I'm working on, I anticipate running into some of the same resistance as well. Sometimes, and I will have to partner with civil rights attorneys, because sometimes the only way to pry the information from various departments, including all the way up to the state attorney general, is to file lawsuits.
Hmm. The other question, too, that comes to mind is, are we going to include the conduct or misconduct of district attorneys and see if there's a pattern there? There's some very well-known cases where the district attorneys, and in this case, we have a presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, who's been quiet with some very egregious cases, you know, one in Bakersfield, the shooting of Andy Lopez, where there seemed to be a conflict of interest with the, I think her name was Ravitch, T.A. Ravitch, and she didn't want to remove herself, and Kamala was silent, and, of course, Mario Woods. And so will this database be looking at that as well?
Yes, indeed. I believe that a lot of times it's not necessarily a mistake because people have limited resources and so forth, but a lot of times it focuses, the police accountability movement focuses on individual officers, it focuses on the department, and a lot of times the district attorneys escape scrutiny, whereas oftentimes the police impunity that they enjoy today is a direct result of them not filing charges against police, or when they do file charges, they're feeble cases, and you almost have to wonder, did they deliberately file a feeble case knowing that it would get thrown out of court? You know, they usually write their own reports on police shootings, and those need to be made public as well so that they can be scrutinized by police accountability organizations, journalists, and the general public.
People are listening. What do you? What would you ask them to do to, you know, assist in, you know, this database? What is needed from you at this point in time, and what's the timeline for it?
Okay. Well, if you're doing any sort of police accountability work, or you're involved, even on an individual level, as a family member who has survived police abuse or have lost a family member to violence. You know, get in touch because this project needs to be developed with all the stakeholders in mind so that it can be as useful as possible to everyone. The primary ask right now is for funds because I want to dedicate myself full time to this. Within 4 months, I think I could develop a very solid working model that has a fair amount of data. It won't have everything, but it's a proof of concept, a prototype. And as well as I'll be spending some of my time on networking and working toward getting some grants, because once there's a prototype, I think some of the big foundations and so forth will be interested and fund it so that the project can be expanded. Other people can be paid for their time for doing research, web development, journalism based on the data that's acquired. So we have a GoFundMe page, and it's at GoFundMe/policefiles. And any contributions of any size are appreciated.
So what's that GoFundMe page again?
It's GoFundMe/policefiles.
And is there a direct email for you if people want to get a hold, ask questions, or correspond with you?
Yes, you can write to policefiles, one word, at protonmail.com.
Spell that out for people.
Sure, that's policefiles at protonmail.com. That's proton.
So there you have it. We're talking about coming up with solutions for systemic problems. This seems to be one that could, you know, really have some legs that could be beneficial for a lot of folks. A centralized database for Northern California that will let you know the patterns on the police officers who are repeat offenders, what the district attorneys are doing. That should be very interesting to see, who's filing charges, who isn't, who's tossing up weak cases, who isn't, all those sorts of things. The goal at the end of the day is to end police terrorism in many of the neighborhoods that are experiencing it, and this seems to be a good start. So once again, the GoFundMe page is again?
Okay, it's GoFundMe.com/policefiles, and it's police-files, PolicFiles.
There you have it. Want to thank Dave ID for spending some time with us this afternoon. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Turn the speaker.